Welcome to Outlander with Friends podcast, where we talk about our favorite Outlander episodes, favorite whiskeys, and all the other bits that nobody wants to talk about.
This podcast is not for the faint of heart, so if you've read about it or watched it, we're going to talk about it.
Clutch your pearls and pour a dram. It's time for Outlander with Friends.
Oh, there it is.
All right. Now we are recording.
I'm going to pour myself a small little dram of Rebel here.
Excellent.
I mean, after last night's shenanigans, I don't even know why I'm doing this, but I'll take one for the team. Now, I'm telling you, my concoction for hangovers, it's a no-brainer. It works every single time. I feel like a million bucks that was washed and left out dry.
It was washed.
So, I mean, how's it going?
Oh, it's going.
I mean, we can just jump right into it. So this week's episode, I chose Rent, episode 5, season 1. And the whiskey, so originally I was going to use Wheat Penny. It's a whiskey out of Cleveland. It's really, really good. It's sweet. Its mash bill is like 51% corn, 45% wheat. It is a super sweet. I don't know how to describe it. It's like salted caramel.
Oh.
But I did not want to check it back. So I went to the local Total Wines and I got this instead. The Rebel Cask Strength. And the reason why I chose this one is because this is the episode that Claire finds out she's rolling with some Rebels.
Appropriate.
So I haven't tried it. Yeah, I haven't tried it yet. So let me. It smells sweet.
I was going to say.
But I love high proof. This is 120 proof.
Yay, girl.
It's 120 proof. It's got some spice on it. So let me try it.
Damn.
Oh, my goodness.
Are we going to get a peek of going out, Ivy, before this episode's done recording?
If I keep drinking this, yes. You got about 15 minutes before my alter ego shows up.
Does she have a middle name?
Yeah, exactly. What's your alter ego's name?
Oh, her name is Shamika. Everybody knows her by Shay Shay.
Down.
Yeah. You'll know
Shay Shay disappeared at the bourbon ball.
Yeah, she definitely showed herself there.
Ooh.
Very quickly. Very quickly. So I will tell you, this one has a very quick finish. It's spicy when you first roll it around the mouth, and then it doesn't last very long. It reminds me of, like, I haven't done any research, but it tastes like it's Lux Row, so it's got to be Heaven Hill. They get a lot of their stuff from Bardstown, so it's pretty good. I will say that I probably won't drink a lot of this because it is spicy. Where do you have it, Meg?
I chose Little Book.
Which one?
I got Chapter 3, year 2019.
Yummy. I love Little Book.
Dude, I know. And I've only got 2.6% on you, or proof on you. Mm. So we both might be feeling a little toasty.
By the end of the recording.
That's what I was texting both girls. I was like, so I'm either going to go with Campfire that's not supposed to be like super good, but it's super appropriate for this episode, or I'm going to go with Little Book because it's like a nod to Ned Gowan.
Yeah.
Book, law, book of the law, Little Book.
I love it.
And I was like, I can't promise you that I won't be slightly tipsy after the end.
I have 3 other whiskeys sitting in front of me just in case this Rebel was hard to swallow.
It's good to have a backup plan.
Yeah.
I meant to pour a little. I poured it.
And you poured a lot.
I did. So I might be pouring some back in the bottle. I did
just
not.
Just drink it all. Don't waste. What are you having, Terry?
I, too, went with the theme of the day. I'm having Wilderness Trail.
That's a good one.
This is Sweet Mash, bottled in bond. And I am the lightweight of the day because my whiskey is only 100 proof or 50% alcohol by volume.
That's the sweet spot, though, in my opinion.
Yeah, that one will keep you on your feet.
And also because we're recording this on Saturday morning, so, I mean, I might have eased my way into my whiskey choice with a little slosh of it into my coffee, maybe.
Yummy.
So appropriate.
Just to get warmed up.
Speaking of drinks, last weekend you guys tried Sassenach Spirits cocktail.
It didn't happen.
It Burns Night?
It didn't happen.
That live was epic. But tell us, how was it? I personally would never mix tequila and whiskey. So kudos to both of you for taking one for the team, because I was not doing it.
I think I'm with Meg on this one. There's no proof, and I'll deny it.
I will say there was about 100 people that saw the proof, but all right, we'll take your word for it.
I will say it was a tasty drink, and it was tricky. And next time I will eat dinner before I have that again, if I ever do.
It was way too tasty. I will never mix tequila and whiskey again. I thought, ew, okay, but I'm going to take one for the team and try it. And from the first sip, I was in heaven. That is a goddamn good drink. But watch out.
I could tell. You guys had a couple of them. And I was like, they are champs. Because
I have a sneaking suspicion that Sassenach Spirit decided to go offline the moment we started making the drink because they didn't want to take responsibility for what it did for us.
That is true, because we couldn't
Bingo.
Get online.
Ding, ding, ding.
I will tell you, that was a really great review that you guys did. There was proof in the pudding, as you say, because I could tell when it hit. I was like, this drink is good. All right, so
when it hit was the next morning, because we did not partake of your hangover prevention.
I'm telling you, it works every single time. Last night, I'm not kidding you, I started out with this beautiful gin and tonic concoction. I had and I told you I was not going to go over four, but I meant four of one cocktail because I stopped. I had four of those and I was like, right, I need to drink some water, eat some charcuterie stuff, and then I'll move on, right?
Yum.
I moved on to Larceny Barrel Proof, and then I finished off with Casamigos, and I was like, oh, this is not going to end well for me. And I took my little charcoal pills, I slammed my Gatorade, I drank some water, I woke up at 6, walked the dogs. I felt fine.
Wow.
I'm telling you, it works every single time. It really does.
All right. Are we doing any tasting notes on these before we jump in the...
I'll take another swig. Let's see what happens.
It's going to sound really basic, but the Wilderness Trail has just a ton of caramel, especially on the palate, but it has a nice long finish. It's still with me, that Kentucky hug.
There it is.
The cool thing about Little Book, yeah, it's hot. I mean, it's 122.6, this one at least, because they are all different. I mean, it doesn't kick you in the face. Like, there's no need to put water in it or anything. I mean, Little Book, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. I think that the reason why I enjoy Little Book, any of them, is because it's always the perfect amount, right, for what you're getting.
Right.
I will say with this cask strength, obviously it's going to be a little bit hotter and spicier, but it doesn't last long, but you got to get past it. So I would actually cut this with a few drops of water if you're not into higher proof whiskeys. It doesn't linger though. So if you're trying to grab tasting notes, you got to get it on the nose because it doesn't stay with you very long. I would say for the price point, it's $40, right? So you want to try a cask strength whiskey without having to purchase something like the Elijah Craig or any of those and not spend a lot of money. This would probably be the way that I would go, but I'm going to be quite honest with you. I probably won't finish this bottle anytime soon because I like a drink. I like a whiskey that the hug is a little bit there for a while. Because I would have to keep drinking this, right? But if you have, for instance, Little Book, you'll take a sip and it'll stay with you for a little while.
Oh,
it's a great sipper. This one, I would give it a solid 5 on my scale of whether or not I would buy it again.
That's fair.
Again, it's at a great price point. And I don't know, Lux Row isn't really known for their whiskeys. They usually charge a lot for mediocre whiskeys, but this one is not that bad. It's just something that I probably wouldn't purchase again.
I went to Lux Row, and I agree with you. Their whiskeys are mediocre. But I will tell you that their experience is out of this world.
I imagine it could be.
So if you do a tour, it'll blow other tours out of the water. I think it's just because it's smaller.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say it's probably because they want you to enjoy the experience of a small distillery.
Yeah.
Like you would if you were at Buffalo Trace or something like that. Yeah. But, yeah, it's meh. It's not bad. It's just not. But also, I do like high proof whiskeys that last long, a long finish. So
I like high proof whiskeys that don't drink like they're high proof whiskeys.
Yeah.
Because I'm a lightweight.
Yeah. That's a better way of explaining what this is. Yeah. So we're going to jump right in. And I picked episode 5, season 1, The Rent. And so I'll tell you why I like this episode so much. I think it's when Claire finally realizes what she's got herself into. I love the flashbacks that she has with Reverend Wakefield and Frank, and they're talking about the Stuart Rising. And I love the realization as it happens. She's like, wait a minute. But well, before we get into that, I'm actually going to play it in the background because there's some key points that I wanted to bring up during this episode, if I can get it to play, because I'm pretty far away. But one of my favorite things Ned Gowan says is when they're like, you know, horse playing by the river. And Claire's like, oh, what is it? What are they talking about? And he's like, they're talking about him having biblical relations with his sister. And I'm like, you know what? I'm using that shit. I'm using that shit every time. I'm about to go have some biblical relations with my husband. I'll be right back.
Ned Gowan's just so PC about everything. It's hard not to love him.
Diplomatic.
Yeah, I was going to say he's very diplomatic. Also, throughout this episode, he kind of is, I don't know, like Claire's obviously accusatory because she doesn't understand what's happening, right? She's like, oh, you guys are stealing money from Colum and you're taking money from these poor villagers that can't afford it. Not knowing that they're raising funds for an army or whatever. But Ned Gowan is like, oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. We're doing all these bad things. You're so smart. Look at you go, girl. And it makes it better for me because I'm like, later on when she's like, well, why didn't you tell me? He's like, well, why would I? You judged a book by its cover. What did you guys think of it?
Well, Ned really put Claire at ease. And I think she forgot once again to guard her words. And it's funny, I'll probably go into it more as the episode goes on, but it's funny how the Highlanders start out not trusting Claire and not accepting her, but Ned seemingly accepts her. He's nice to her. He'll indulge her. He'll get her talking. And then they sort of switch places as the episode moves on. And Ned gets a little more withdrawn as he realizes that she is starting to understand what is occurring in front of her face. He's realizing she does understand enough Gaelic to figure out what they're doing, collecting money for a rebel army. And then he starts whispering in Dougal's ear. And as the Highlanders are getting more like, oh, yeah, you're one of us. And Ned and Dougal are pulling back more and the trust is dissipating on their end. So it's a teeter-totter where one group's going up in trust.
Why do you think, this is one of the things that I was kind of like, maybe somebody's talked about it before, but you know, I don't have total recall, like my brain's shit. But why do you think he brought Claire with him? Because like in my mind, she felt like they were trusting her, right? So like, oh, we need a doctor to come with this, and et cetera, et cetera. So she's like, oh, I think they're starting to trust me. But I kind of felt like the reason why he brought her is that if anybody recognized her along the way, they would say something.
Oh my God, that's really insightful. And I had never considered that. When you were asking the question just now, I started to think, well, maybe he thought she'd run away if she was left alone in the castle without guards.
But there's so many people at the castle, right? There's like hundreds of people there. Like she tried to leave at the gathering and they caught her super quick.
But she also said halfway through the episode, she said, I felt like the entire time he was just expecting me or wanting, what was the wording? Expecting me to run. So I wonder if he was kind of testing her at the same time.
Could be. I just thought it was, I don't know. I didn't feel like it was a case. I felt like he probably thought, oh, she's like, they're going through every place. Like when she ran down that hill, they were not far from the edge of their clan land. So if she was doing what she allegedly was supposed to be doing, like, oh, me and my, you know, person was, you know, we were set upon by highwaymen and we were on our way to Inverness or whatever the case is, like somebody would have recognized her. They're like, oh yeah, we remember her.
Interesting.
The other part too, this is kind of funny. So you remember the song that they were singing?
About grinding corn?
Okay, so I was like, everyone talks about this, right? And I think it's hilarious. But have you ever seen anybody grind corn? You understand how hard you gotta mash that shit to get it to, like, there's no part of me that wants my corn mashed. Like, what are you talking about?
You need to get on the Urban Dictionary and search for grinding corn.
Grinding corn. I mean, I just, like, I'm thinking about grinding corn and I'm like, I have never seen corn being ground in a sensual way or a satisfying way that looks like it's hard work. It looks like it would take a long time. Well, it looks like it'd be painful.
It's more about subtle friction on Urban Dictionary. Let's just put it that way.
I'll have to look that up because I was like...
I'm looking it up right now.
And also, the other part was like, Claire's outfits throughout this whole like episode. Where is she getting these nice ass clothes from?
I was thinking the same thing.
Like, who's giving her these clothes? Like, did Letitia? Did Leary? Like, how did she get these outfits?
And also, how did she change without any women helping her?
Helping her, right.
I don't know about the women helping her, but Ron Moore and Terry Dresbach were talking about it. And Terry actually did address the different outfits that Claire brought and all the layers. And it was out of place that she brought something dressy or something nicer to wear for one of the days during the rent party. And I can't remember off the top of my head exactly which one it was. But Terry's response was, well, sometimes you just have to ignore certain things so that the narrative can continue in the show. That's it.
But guess what? We noticed that shit.
It's our job to do it. All right. Can I read this to y'all?
Yeah.
Yes.
What are you reading?
Grinding corn.
Yeah. Grinding corn. Term for a sexual technique, picture the action of grinding corn with a mortar and pestle.
I was.
Grinding along the rim instead of grinding in the bowl. A penis is the mortar and a vagina is the pestle, with her pubic bone and clitoris the rim.
That is very specific. And again, those objects, grinding corn, does not feel like something that I would want to be a part of.
Like, who thinks of these things? That sounds foul.
It doesn't sound pleasant to me. Like, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
Kink locked off.
Yeah, we're not. That was not a new kink for me.
That's not unlocked. That's locked up.
Yeah, so the episode, or as the episode goes on, like when they get to that village and Claire's talking shit with Ned because this guy brings a live pig and she's like, didn't you say no live pigs? And I'm like, stop being petty. Like, you're just being petty right now. And of course he's pissed, but I also wonder why not? Did they ever say why? Like, why not live pigs? You could get a lot of product out of a pig, you know? They have huge litters. So I wonder why he was like, no live pigs.
Maybe he has asthma, an asthmatic reaction to pigs.
That's fair, but...
I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't like them.
Somebody's going to tell us.
I know.
It's true. Somebody will tell us on our socials.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, like, these are legitimate questions. I mean, at me, I don't care. But like, I don't know.
Did you ever... do you sit there during this episode and you think, like, shut up, Claire?
Yes.
You sound like a child, Claire.
Yes.
You need to shut your mouth.
Very much
so. You're digging yourself in a hole. Like, why?
This was a very annoying episode for me in a lot of ways. And that was one of them. It's like, why are you being so petulant right now? I get it. You're frustrated. Maybe, I don't know. She's been out there for a few weeks. She might be menstruating. I don't know. She seems like she's having an emotional breakdown over a fucking pig.
Total empathy.
Yeah. And I get it. I know, and I get it, but I'm like, you're getting all crazy over a goat, man. Like, there's wet nurses in that village, I'm sure. That baby's really not going to starve. But she was just like, hey, we ain't got it because we had to give it away. Which brings me to the pee-pee song, right? And somebody's probably going to at me, and I'm not trying to be dismissive.
You just invited people to at you, so fair.
Yeah, I mean, fair. Yeah, that's true. So... I watched this episode like 4 times, right? The first thing is, like, she sat down, didn't even roll her sleeves up, and was like, let me get in there. I was like, I know, I get it. I get the cultural reference. I've lived in countries where you use the most basic necessities to get the job done, right? But I honestly was like, how do you not smell like piss all day? Like, can you imagine what I thought of when I saw that part of the episode? I said, I bet this smells like somebody that has like 50 cats. You know that ammonia smell?
Oh, yeah.
The crazy cat lady smell. Like, because like that is a lot of piss.
I wondered what she washed her hands with after that was over. And I, of course, we don't see it. But knowing Claire.
I'm going to assume that it happened.
Alcohol.
She's a doctor or a nurse.
I'm going to assume that she did wash her hands with something.
Yeah, because
if she didn't wash her hands, then that would probably make her more attractive to Angus, which is a bad thing.
Medical side of things, just how dehydrated they always are, because they only the clean water didn't exist, right? So they were drinking alcohol. Well, think about how concentrated your urine is after drinking alcohol.
That's what I'm saying. Like, ugh. I just, But then, like, this is to set the dye, right? Like that, and then they're going to hang it up, obviously. So now your clothes smell like piss.
And you're going to be wearing them.
You're going to wear it. You're going to smell like piss all day long.
That's something that Diana does not describe when she gets into all the senses in the books.
But I will tell you, again, once again, the way that she describes this scene in the book, I definitely smelled cat piss. I was like, yep, I could smell it. It's definitely one of those things. But this also reminded me, too, when she sat down and they're in that hut and they're drinking. And it reminded me of, like, when you go to the club, like, when you're in your 20s, right? Her enthusiasm is just, like, I love Claire's enthusiasm. She's like, yeah, let me get in there. She didn't roll her sleeves up, so I'm going to say that again. That was fucking gross. But it reminds me when you're drunk at the club and you make best friends with girls in the bathroom, and the next thing you know, they're like holding your hair because you're throwing up, or they're like,
those are the best times ever. Oh, you're so pretty.
I love you so much.
That guy's an asshole. How dare he? You are so pretty. You look great.
Well, that's probably the first time that she ever felt like actually a part of the community, you know?
Yeah.
Like the first time in the first time.
Because like everyone at the castle kind of treated her exactly as what she was, like an outsider, except for Mrs. Fitz. Mm. She's the best. But the rest of them were like, man, I don't know this chick.
Frickin'. Yeah.
And speaking of Angus, he's a little son of a bitch in this episode, don't you think? Like I did not like him at all. And I know that later on he becomes somebody that we're sad about.
When he dies.
Which I wasn't. I mean, I was sad because, like, him and Rupert are, like, Ethel and Lucy. You know what I mean? But he's a fucking asshole in this one. Like, why are you like this?
But isn't he the first to, like, slam the guy's head into the table when they're talking shit?
Yeah.
That's what I meant about you watch Claire go from a stranger, an outsider with the Highlanders, to eventually being the one that they get in a big bar brawl to defend her honor. And Angus is the one who starts it. And there's a little piece of that you see prior to the bar fight where he's helping untie her bedroll so that she can set up camp. But
that's true.
At the same time, Dougal and Ned are pulling back from her. It's really kind of interesting if you watch the whole episode with an eye to that. Not to mention, we've got to give props for the joke. And poor Rupert, never heard a woman make a joke. I think you've never listened to a woman before because they're making all kinds of jokes. You're just not getting them.
So I will tell you this. I was watching because I wanted to do the wedding, but I was like, nah. I'll do the rent. But there is a scene, and I want somebody to find this, right? Where Rupert was officially the first person to coin the phrase, that's what she said.
What?
You have to go look at it. I swear to you, the way that he says it, it's literally, that's what she said. I'm not even kidding you. Somebody's going to find it. It's in the wedding. I know the marker, but I wonder if anybody will catch it now. Because of the way he says it, I'm not kidding you. He's the first person to coin that phrase.
All right, I'm going to put a post on our Instagram story and we're going to get responses and see how many people find that. Mark me.
I'm telling you, it's there. Mark you.
We'll do a shout out to whoever gets it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I was like, did he just?
We'll shout out in our next episode to everybody who gets that right.
I love it. Yeah, so anyways, like, we're going through the episode, like, get past that part where she's righteously indignant about the goat and starts acting up. But I also want to talk about this lieutenant that just shows up.
Lieutenant Jeremy Foster.
First of all, he is so fine.
I know.
Like, have you guys IMDb him? Holy shit.
No, but
he is fine as hell.
I watch Grantchester, wherein he plays a priest.
Mm.
What's his real name?
Can we go ahead and unlock a new kink? I can't remember. Something Brittany.
Jeremy Foster, right?
Tom Brittany.
Tom Brittany, that's what his name is. But when I say that man is fine, I was like, oh shit, welcome back, sir. But why was he there?
The horses of the Redcoats were quartered in town.
Oh.
And he was working in the forge on reshoeing his horse or doing something with its hooves. I don't know where the rest of the Redcoats were in that episode, but...
Yeah, it just seemed like in that scene, it seemed like they were at somebody's, like, farm.
No, that was a little village.
Oh, it didn't look... I mean...
Oh, she just IMDb'd Tom Brittany, didn't you?
No, my Instagram.
Girl, I told you, he's fine, ain't he? Oh, yeah. He's still... Ooh. But still, you see? Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, girl, I mean, I got stuck on it. I was like, damn, he's mm-hmm. fine. Love it.
And he's tall. He looks really tall.
Yeah. Oh, he's so fine. But yeah, enough of that in case anybody wants to know. What was his at again?
Tom Brittany, Brittney.
Yes.
Tom Brittany, bitch.
Yes, yes, yes.
Can I bring something up?
Sure.
So when he sleeps outside her door in the pub.
I was going to mention that next.
Yeah. This is your episode. Do it. And then I might comment.
No, no, go ahead, because mine is just a joke.
Let him sleep in your room. They already call you a whore. You have no reputation.
Right.
Get to it. Like, just do it. Just do it.
I literally, that was going to be my what if. I'm like, what if she let him, like, sleep in her room?
That was going to be my what if, too.
But I will tell you, I know that this is a stretch, but if you guys have ever listened to Kevin Hart.
I like them.
The way that Jamie was appalled. Like, bitch, you want me to do what? You want me to come in your room? So my husband, I'm going to share this because he's funny. So he went to a bachelor party a few months ago for one of our friends that were getting married. And one of the guys suggested that they go to a strip club. And he's like, Ivy, I was so appalled. I am a married man. And I swear to you, I thought that same thing when Jamie looked at her like, you want me to do what? I am a gentleman, okay? I don't do shit like that. But what if she had? I think the wedding night scene would have been a whole lot different.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to out myself here as a reader of fanfic, and there's a really good fanfic out there about what if Jamie had not spent the night in the hallway.
So the other thing that I noticed, Dougal kind of foreshadows his own death in this episode, because he talks to Claire by the river, and he accuses her of, like, getting close to Ned, using her womanly wiles to sow seeds of doubt. You remember that? Do you remember when he got killed before Culloden, what he said to Jamie about Claire? How she used her womanly wiles to poison his mind because they were trying to... So he mentions it here, and I was like, man, he kind of foreshadowed his own death because he said the same shit right before they killed him.
That is super interesting. I love it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Culloden, the feeling that I got rewatching this episode was so much stronger having visited Culloden more. I hope I don't sound like I'm harping on this over and over. Out there, if our listeners ever want to go to Scotland and tour Outlander sites, don't skip Culloden Moor. It's unbelievably moving. And you go through the museum there, and then you go out and you walk around. And I could not believe this, but they didn't shoot the Frank and Claire scenes at Culloden itself. They recreated it someplace else, and the big stone cairn is a CGI in the show. But I can't overstate how much it touched me when I was at Culloden and now rewatching this episode, how impactful that battle and the end of the Highland way of life really is.
I don't know what it is with me and places where, like, mass death has occurred. I don't enjoy the feeling of, because I feel like I'm walking over people's graves. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Have you ever gone to Gettysburg? Or I used to have a friend that was a lawyer, and he was a photographer, too. He was, like, in his 70s. And he was kind of mentoring me. And he used to go to all of the Civil War battlefields. He would take me to these battle sites, and I'm like, I would get like a real, like a cringy feeling. Like, I feel like I'm stepping on people's like graves, and I'd never enjoyed going to those type of sites.
People have different reactions for sure. I wouldn't say I enjoyed necessarily being at Culloden at the memorial, but it was an experience that I would not change at all. I think I enjoyed it for the melancholy. I mean, that's a thing.
No, I get it. I think, yeah. I mean, again, like, I get incredibly sad. And I know that when you have an event like that, like, think about, like, Gettysburg. Like, that was the marker for the end of the Civil War. And despite the reasons why and the things that happened that led up to that, it's hard to see a civilization fall. It really is, no matter in what capacity it is, right? I feel that everybody fights for the things that they believe in.
Exactly.
When they're passionate about it. Like, when you're willing to die and sacrifice your life and your livelihood for it, I think that that's a noble cause. Like, I don't agree with slavery, but I understand the passion of wanting to keep your way of life, right? We do it every day. I was in the military for 20 years. There's so many other, like, historical incidences where civilizations have just completely fallen. And it sucks. And I think that's probably maybe the main reason why it's hard for me to visit places like that, because I'm here because you had to die for whatever cause you believed in.
I think it's a whole nother level for you because of your past and your military career and what you've seen and what you've been through compared to us who are just like, thanks for what you've done. We appreciate you. And we'll never really understand the extreme things that you've gone through to fight for us.
Sorry, that got deep, man. That got deep, but it needed to be said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their whole civilization is just gone. That was deep.
And piggybacking that, when Frank goes over everything that they lost after they lost the Jacobite Rebellion, I mean, they literally lost their culture. They were told that they could not.
They weren't even allowed to really celebrate Christmas or Yule after that. Actually, it was before that, but
that I think really got me was the fact when you're not even allowed to speak your own tongue anymore. Can you imagine? And it reminds me of those assimilation camps that Native Americans were forced to go to, and they weren't allowed to speak their own tongue. Like, that is
right.
And then, like, the African slaves that were brought over, they had to learn English. They had to give up everything that they knew.
Their tribal language. Yes.
Right. You had to die for whatever it was that you believed in. Like, and that's what also makes me appreciate life too. Like, how many people in my line of my genealogy and family had to survive for me to be sitting right here. And that's why I love Outlander, because the first season is all about that, right? That's how she got in this situation in the first place. Cause Frank was looking for who he was, his ancestors, you know? So yeah, just to wrap that all up and tie it in a nice little bow. There you go.
Don't make me thank Frank for the story. I stick with thanking Diana. I know Frank is part of Diana's head, but
Frank knocked on Diana's head and was like, hey, girl, I got a story for you.
I won't do it. I will not do it. I refuse. Flat out refuse.
So yeah, this episode has like the first cliffhanger too. I think that's why I liked it, because it's like dun dun dun.
Ooh, yeah.
Because when they're standing by the river and old Brittany comes back, Jeremy Foster comes back and he's like, hey, I brought my boys with me. I'm going to ask you that question again. Dougal, talk some shit this time, right? Go ahead.
I have so much more admiration for people who create television for us. The script for episode 5 actually went on for another 5 or 6 minutes of filming, but in the editing suite is where they decided to end episode 5 on a cliffhanger. Wow. And I don't think they could have made a better choice. I am 100% behind this how they episode. Ended.
Yeah. This is, I think, what got me hooked. But it also, speaking of what ifs, this is the what if segment of our show, right? We've already covered one. What if she had just let him, like, I don't know what kind of convincing Claire would have had to do to get Jamie to come in that room, because he was not about that life. But if you see in the wedding, she like, let me just pull this string and I'll show you why you need to come inside.
He was not about that life. And yet my response to that statement is looking up and down the way Claire did when he told her he was a virgin. Like, wait, what?
You're about that life, sir. You're about that life. But yeah, so the other part is, you know how Claire was doing the wrong thing and was like, hey, you're gonna lose this war and every single thing you've ever known.
This is like the first time that she really stepped into that.
Yeah.
Leaned into that. Like, this is not good and here's what's gonna happen.
She becomes way more bold about it.
Right.
Sure.
Do you think the reason why Ned was Team Claire, try to make her feel like a part of the team, try to explain different nuances to her so she wouldn't feel like left out. But the way that Ned looked at her when she was like, you're going to lose, and he's all like, you can have your opinion and you can also fuck off, right?
Boom.
But what if Ned obviously went back and told Dougal, right? Because he had mentioned it to her. But like, what do you think Claire could have said to Ned to make him believe? Because like, he obviously had some doubts because she was very passionate about it. I thought the reason why he was so passionate about it is because despite her being a lady and obviously harmless, she was still an Englishwoman. You know what I mean? Like, how dare you? That's what I thought. That was the reason why, besides his patriotism.
Yeah.
He's also like, bitch, who do you think you are? You're English. You're just saying that because you're English. Right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. He was absolutely thinking she's just so confident because she was raised as a proper English lady.
She speaks out of turn. I mean, that's...
Right. I think that, the way he looked at her, he was like, bitch, I'll slap the piss out of you. Like, you don't tell me that we're not going to win. But I think that for Claire to, like, speak up and say something, she's been a bitch this whole episode. And Ned has watched this whole entire time. He's a very observant man. And then for her to be like, you guys are going to lose any fucking way, he kind of took it personally. Like, obviously he should. But the way she said it, he was like, bitch, like, look at his face. I'm literally watching it right now. Okay, I'm going to go back to my business, but I'm going to say something to Dougal right now.
He started whispering in Dougal's ear toward the end of the episode. Every time Claire said something, he would be within minutes.
He went
minutes.
Back and snitched on her. Yeah.
He's like, you should be a lawyer, but you can't be one, so.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, yeah, I love that part.
And then she's like, well, in 200 years.
I know, but it was great. It was great.
Only 200.
And for her, that was like a week ago, so meh.
Yeah.
But I think that the other part, like I was observing, is like, you know, the cliffhanger. Before I had actually finished the season and watched it when I first saw it as the cliffhanger, I was like, what if she was like, get him, boys. I don't know this motherfucker. And like takes off running. Like, what would have happened in that moment to Dougal? I know he would have been like, this bitch.
Claire went and grew feelings for the Highlanders, even Dougal, because she really could have escaped so much.
Oh, that was a perfect opportunity. Like, I don't know why she didn't take it. Like, why didn't you take that opportunity?
That's the what if.
Because you weren't getting back, you know? That's the what if. Like, why didn't you tell them? Like, get them, boys. We're out of here. I mean, she didn't have to snitch. You know what I mean? She didn't have to tell them what they were talking about. No. She just needed to get away from them so she could get back to the stones.
Yes, I am a prisoner.
I am here against my will.
What would happen, though? So let's just say, though, like, she got away, she went with the Redcoats, then what? Like, do you think they would have just dropped her off at Craig Nadun? Or, I guess maybe she was like, I'm not willing to take that chance. The devil you know, right?
It wouldn't have made much difference because she and Dougal went to Fort William together at that point with the Redcoats, and
yep.
Blackjack showed up in the middle of dinner in the next episode.
That's
so.
Good point.
The timing wouldn't have been any better for her if she had said she was being held against her will.
That's true.
Which kind of fizzles the what if in this case.
Thanks for being rational.
I think she would have ended back at Black Jack Randall. It just would have been a bad scenario.
Yeah, but I was like, you know, you could have just dropped me off over here on this hill real quick. I'm not supposed to be with him.
Lieutenant Jeremy Foster would not have allowed that. He wouldn't have just left her out in the wilderness.
But let's say, for instance, she convinced him to drop her off at the stones. And then she walked through those bitches. What do you think he would have done? Like, what just happened here? I would have loved it. Oh my God, that would have been great.
Then the story would have been...
But could Blackjack Randall go through the stones?
Nah.
Well, Frank couldn't. So I don't think that he could, right?
He's not a time traveler.
He's not, because it's her timeline or her ancestors somewhere in her gene pool that allowed her to do that. So yeah.
I love all this stuff about, I want Master Raymond book, but I also want to know Frank knew. All right. So I'm going to completely left turn here. Let's cover the announcement of 8th and final season just briefly. Anybody have a...
Okay.
Bittersweet.
I will tell you this. I'm glad that it's almost over. And I'm saying this because for people that watched like Game of Thrones, right? You love it. If you read the books, I think they did a great rendition of it for television. But There's no way that I think TV can keep up with Diana's mind. And I would hate for them to rush to provide entertainment for us and not let her finish out her books, right? Because I want it all the way to the end. But I don't want them to write something that forces her into writing something that she isn't true to.
Amen.
Because that's what happened with Game of Thrones.
Well, George R.R. Martin didn't even write anything. He still hasn't even written book six.
Right. And they were like, well, we're going to tie it all up for you. And it was horrible.
Yeah, it was not at all.
And I don't want that to happen to Jamie and Claire. So I'm glad that they were like, hey, we're going to get you to this point of the story. And then we're going to move on. Also, I almost called her Claire. Katrina and Sam, they have to move on with their lives.
Yeah.
This is not a sitcom. This is not Grey's Anatomy. You. This is not Friends or any, they have to move on. Like you just, right. And so I'm glad that they announced that it was the eighth and final season. And I'm excited to see what they do next, because I'll tell you what, Katrina can act her ass off. Have you guys seen Belfast?
It was amazing.
Yes.
I watched it like six times, man. I'm not going to lie. It was a great,
so good.
Great. She's such a phenomenal actor.
Yeah. With Jamie Dornan.
Oh, I can't wait to see what she does next.
I hope they let her direct a block in season eight. Because that would be an amazing send-off and an amazing kickoff to another facet of her career.
I mean, she directed some episodes in season six, right? She produced. Was she an executive producer?
She and Sam became producers in season five. They are going to be executive producers, or they are executive producers of season seven and presumably season eight. But I think the only thing that Katrina is directing, maybe, and we don't even know this for sure, but I think she might be directing some scenes in season seven or maybe an episode, but I'm not really sure about that. I'm just going off of things that were reported on social media about her presence during some time periods of shooting last summer, and the fact that she isn't present in that part of the book that, based on who else in the cast was seen during the same week of shooting at Lallybroch, blah blah blah. So it's total conjecture.
What do you think the overall feeling is about that announcement? Like, I don't really get into it, so
that has been.
Did I trigger you?
Yes. You did not trigger me. What triggered me was, well, I had to stay off of social media for most of Thursday when the announcement came out because, and I'm going to piss some people off here, you're entitled to your feelings and your feelings are valid for you. But if you really thought we were going to have 10 seasons to cover 10 books, you were deluding yourself. We were never going to have 10 seasons.
That's unreasonable.
Be thrilled that we are getting season eight and be thrilled that they're announcing it ahead of time and Starz is not canceling it. To be honest, the ratings are not what they used to be for Outlander.
COVID can be blamed for that.
I'm so thrilled they have 10 seasons. Not 10 seasons, sorry, 10 episodes of season eight where they'll probably pull in a little bit of book nine. I have utterly no clue if we're going to see anything wrapped up about Jamie's ghost because, frankly, if season eight gets finished before Diana finishes book 10, I don't think we're getting a ghost wrap up in the show because I don't think Diana is going to allow her 10th book to be spoiled that way. That's just my personal feeling.
I think that you're right.
Good word is bittersweet. You got to get the sweet in there, though. And if you want to move on with your life, you got to focus on the sweet part of it, because otherwise you'll just be bitter. End of rant.
You're right. I think usually that's me.
I wanted my time.
So this is how Diana has solidified her legacy. By what you just said, there's not going to be any closure on Jamie's ghost, and we're going to be talking about it for the rest of our lives. This show will go on in infinity because we're going to talk to our kids about it and our grandkids about it. And you're like, you know what? I want you guys to mark me. There's going to be and we may do it ourselves, a podcast just about Jamie's ghost, right? It's going to be like a murder mystery kind of
clue.
I'm not saying that someday maybe they do a movie to wrap it up. Downton Abbey did two movies. The Last Kingdom is doing a movie to wrap everything up. That's absolutely a possibility. I'm just saying we weren't ever going to get 10 seasons to cover 10 books.
I'm glad they're not doing 10 seasons. I think you can't expect, that's a long time, one, to stay invested. And you're right, the ratings are fluctuating. And I say, like, they hit a peak during COVID, and then we got through the Droughtlander, and people are like, meh. And they moved on, right?
Yeah.
Bridgerton kind of like spoiled that, but...
Ugh, now you've triggered me. That's a rant for another day, but ugh, don't get me started on Bridgerton.
I refuse to watch it.
Don't go after Shonda. Don't go after Shonda. Don't do it.
I will fight you.
I will tell you, I read all the books, so I was disappointed. Only because I know it's just for TV, but I do enjoy the diversity that that show brings. And I love the modern twist that the show brings, but... the storyline is like, meh.
Those are definitely good things, but the comparisons between Bridgerton and Outlander, oh, hell no.
Oh, no, they're not the same.
Outlander is so...
superior.
So superior
Outlander
to Bridgerton.
Outlander is legitimate.
Fight me.
But, like, there's no historical basis for Bridgerton except for it's a historical romance. It's a period piece. Outlander is a historical part of our lives. Like, that shit really happened. Bridgerton is just a bunch of people fucking. Like, that's what it is. Like, you're going through the lives of eight.
Are the Bridgerton books written as diverse as the TV show is cast?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
That's Shonda. That's how she does. In, like, all of her shows that she writes, she tries to give everybody representation, which I'm fine with. I think that's great. But, like, the books and the show are not written the same in any even the storyline's different.
Okay.
But good for her. But yeah, so that was The Rent. It was serious. It had a roller coaster of emotions. So I hope you enjoyed it. As much as I did, at least. That was one of my favorite episodes of season one. I do have another one that I would like to do if we decide that we're going to go that route. But also, this is Outlander with friends, right? So I think we should get some friends of Outlander and of us to give us some ideas for their favorite episode and have them on to talk about it.
100%.
Sounds fun.
Are we talking season one at this point? Because we're still in our season one coverage.
Yeah, sure.
All right. We will put up another post on our stories and on our feed on Instagram at Outlander with Friends asking for contributions. What is your favorite episode and why should you come on to talk about it with us?
Maybe they'll have better insight than what we have.
Undoubtedly.
I just have burning questions that need to be answered. And somebody's going to answer them. And that's what I love about this so much is because I honestly don't know anybody outside of the fandom that I could talk to about this show. It's a very niche group of people. So, I mean, my husband will entertain it for like 5 minutes.
And people think about it so much because of rewatching and rereading the books. And they come at it from different perspectives and they look at it from different perspectives. And lots of people seem very open to looking at it from perspectives they hadn't thought about before, which is a really cool thing in today's day and age. Like,
yeah, absolutely. That's what I love about Outlander. Also, I've said it before, like, if you can get somebody to hate you because of a character you played, you're a damn good actor. I follow Nell on social media, and the amount of hate she got for that character is what made me look at it again. Like,
mm-hmm.
You did a good job. Yes.
So.
100%. All right.
Next episode.
Next week, we're going to be doing Meg's Choice, which is?
Lallybroch. Yeah.
Love Lallybroch. Oh, I cannot wait.
Meg's Choice sounds like a very dramatic movie. Meg's Choice.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
It's going to be a very dramatic movie.
Full of drama.
That's a great episode. I can't wait.
It is. I'm so excited. And you really get to see Jamie and his element and just that dynamic. And I'm super excited.
Things get real at Lallybroch. I love it.
Thank you.
Love Jenny's like true introduction. This is her true introduction. I love it. Oh, I can't wait. Little sassy britches.
She is a force to be reckoned. Yes.
Love her.
I like to channel her energy.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention she's a little hottie.
Fact.
All right. We're going to wrap it up for this week's episode. Thanks everybody for listening. Remember, new episodes drop every week on Tuesday. Be sure to like and subscribe, which you can now do on Apple Podcasts. Yeah.
Yay.
That's great.
Finally. This is why you guys should be Samsung users, by the way. I didn't have to wait. I got it the day that it dropped.
Ooh, shots fired.
I'm just saying. Team Galaxy.
Share with your friends. Follow us on Instagram at Outlander with Friends and all of our socials. And we'll see you next week.
All right, ladies.
Bye.